take one step at a time. Do what's good for you. Physical activity is going for a walk. And, you know, just because I'm doing something that might seem outrageous, there are people that are doing things that I think are outrageous. You know, it's taking that first step.
Whether it's the clothes you wear to work or a metaphor for putting up a front, we all wear a uniform. But often there's a lot going on behind the uniform, and many of us are reluctant to express how we are really feeling.
Each week on Behind the Uniform, Dr. Izzy Smith and Captain Hugo Tovey will be joined by a special guest as they talk openly and honestly about their experiences with mental health. Nothing will be off limits, so prepare yourself for tears, laughter and goosebumps. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Behind the Uniform podcast. My name is Izzy and today, like every other week, I'm joined by my host Hugo Tovey. Hugo, how have I gone with my first introduction?
You have smashed it, Izzy. I told you there's nothing to be worried about. You're an absolute natural at it, but thanks for the intro, Izzy. Good to be back and how's your day been?
Pretty good. I was up until 3 or 4 a.m. last night watching Netflix because I couldn't sleep. So, bit of a tough start to the morning. I was going to say this week I'm really good. Since I got my new job, I'm so relaxed, and then last night, no sleep. But apart from that, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing pretty well, actually. I'm pretty excited for today's guest.
Yes, I am excited too. We have today someone called Scott Henderson, who you might know as the editor of the Men's Health magazine. So Scott had been with Men's Health for 3 years and then 2 years as the head editor, and he was involved with the kind of changing direction of Men's Health, being more about mental health, holistic well-being, and I kind of think about, you know, redefining what modern masculinity is. So he has a wealth of knowledge. He also has a background in health and fitness himself. And I'm sure great stories from all the guests he's met from his time in Men's Health. So Scott, thank you so much for coming today.
No worries. Thanks for having me, and nailed the intro. Very well done. I'm not worthy.
Last time I tried to do the intro, I kind of mucked it up 3 times. So
yeah. I don't know how you did it on such little sleep as well. I went to sleep at 9 p.m. last night and I'm not going to be as coherent as that at all. So,
well then, Scott, we're expecting a flawless podcast episode from you with a restless
maybe
sleep.
I'm still asleep. Yeah.
thanks for joining us, Scott. And as you said, it's great to have someone of your caliber, and it's a bit of a different approach this week. But the theme on Behind the Uniform is really delving behind that metaphorical uniform or literal uniform. And for you, I think it's a great example for, say, Men's Health, because a lot of the poster boys or the guys on the cover, you know, you've had a big part in the directional change with Men's Health and, you know, delving into, say, their mental health and stuff like that. So often, you know, the shiny abs you see on the cover or the big body you see on the cover, there's a lot going on behind that cover, if that makes sense. So, look, before we get into your journey and before we get into a bit of your personal story and you know, what you're up to these days, we just thought we'd ask you, which we like to ask all our guests, what are you doing when you're your most happiest?
Look, mine's a little cliche, but I'm either, especially for a Men's Health editor, but I'm either working out or surrounded by mates or family. So I guess if you combine those, I'm kind of being active out in nature with my mates or family. So, and I mean, again, I think a lot of people think that being active means you have to be smashing a gym workout, you know. Going for a walk with my best mate is when I'm at my happiest, you know, out in nature, out in the open air, just doing something active and pretty much free of devices, unplugged.
Love it.
And I think that's a theme we're having with most of our guests. It's not, you know, when I'm holding a trophy or at a fancy party, it's when I'm present, when I'm with my children, when I'm in nature. So I think things are cliche for a reason, and that's because they're great. So
exactly, yeah. There's it's that saying, I don't know the exact saying, but it's, you know, saying it's like hanging out with people that make you forget to touch your phone. Mm. And that's probably when I'm at my happiest, yeah. Is when I'm around those people.
Yeah, when you realize you haven't looked at your phone for 3 hours, you're like, oh, wow, I've actually been really present.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which a bit of a segue there, because it's kind of, you know, just going to ask you kind of what your childhood was like and what your sort of upbringing was like. And I think it is an interesting comment when you're talking about phones. So I think today a lot of, you know, young kids are they living on their phones and their iPads at restaurants and stuff. So, you know, when I was younger, I'm only 28, all we did was get out and about and play in the backyard because we didn't really have that luxury of a phone. So moving into that, what was your childhood and sort of upbringing like?
I was just going to say, remember when like Foxtel was the big technology? Yeah. Or it was like, can I go home and
mate,
play,
you're
my,
fancy. I never had
play
Foxtel.
My Nintendo 64?
Oh, mate, Nintendo 64 is still good.
Yeah, true. If I could get my hands on one. But no, my childhood was amazing. I come from a great family. And, you know, actually, it's funny you kind of say that, like parenting these days, but you look back and what I thought was super strict from my parents, you know, we were only ever allowed half an hour of TV a week, and we got to choose what that was.
A week,
yeah, wow. Yeah. So my half an hour was 7:30 Mondays. It was Friends on Channel 9.
Good choice.
But yeah, so that was kind of like the treat, you know. And I guess that's probably why I kind of value the outdoors and creativity, you know. Like like you say, there weren't those distractions. You had to kind of like use your imagination and get out and play and play with your friends or play with your siblings and that sort of thing. So I'm super grateful for my upbringing. It was you know, I hope one day to kind of share that similar experience with my kids. Yeah,
great. And you are obviously passionate about health and fitness and well-being. Can you tell us a little bit about how that evolved and I guess what health and well-being means to you?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, there's no particular kind of like aha moment for me. It was just, I always grew up kind of active. I was always a swimmer at school. I played rugby, played basketball. I think probably the school I went to was quite, they encouraged sport. It was quite a sporting school. But, you know, just on the weekends, like I said, you know, it was always playing with mates. It was down at the beach. And that kind of continued past school as well. You know, I took up surfing and that kind of became a bit of an escape from uni, kept up swimming. But it was also a bit of a social thing for me as well, you know, like being on the swim team, being on footy teams. It's just a way to meet mates, connect with people that are like-minded. You know, back in the high school days as well, being on the swim team was a way to meet girls. It was, you know, it's if we're just being totally honest. No.
Swimmers have great shoulders.
I was always a massive late bloomer at school, so I tried to play water polo and I just got pushed to the side, unfortunately. So yeah. I don't know if that helped me too much in the girl department.
Oh, I tried water polo, man. I couldn't do it. The swimming skills didn't transfer. It was just too much kicicking underwater. It was aggressive.
So from failing at water polo, how did the journey to becoming the editor of Men's Health happen?
So it was a bit unique. So I, you know, most magazine editors or kind of editors in general start with a journalism degree. I actually did a combined degree. I did sports science and international studies. So I didn't necessarily go into my formal education knowing what I wanted to do. I just knew what I was interested in. So, you know, I had thoughts of doing physio. I had kind of all different kind of thoughts in health and fitness. Eventually, I ended up working for myself. Well, I had a great business partner and we had a business that was basically health and marketing, sorry, PR and marketing in the health and fitness space. So that's where I kind of got to work with great kind of experts in the field and kind of work with them. And then obviously, I was working with the men's health team as part of that function of that role and that business. And then an opportunity came up to become the digital editor on Men's Health. And I kind of jumped at it because, you know, growing up with Men's Health, it's kind of a way being on the other side and writing for a brand like Men's Health, I could write about what I wanted to write about and what I was passionate about rather than who was paying the bills in the marketing and PR business.
No, you know? I love that. What I particularly found fascinating, what's obviously relevant to this podcast, being a mental health podcast, is that, you know, when you got into that position of being, you know, content director and editor of, you know, one of the largest or the largest men's health magazine, was that, you know, the traditional men's fitness magazines with, you know, the ripped guy covered in oil with their shirt off, you wanted to really evolve that, which was really great and in particular, you wanted to have that mental health focus on it. What was the reasoning behind that? Is that something, you know, you've always been passionate about, or when you had that opportunity to be in charge of that magazine, what was the reasoning behind evolving that?
Yeah, definitely. I've always seen, you know, just from my own experiences and research and kind of being in the industry for 15 plus years now, you know, I'm such a huge believer that health is holistic. You know, there's a great saying by Ross Edgley, who we were just talking about off mic before, and it's your body is an instrument, not an ornament. So you want to treat your body with respect. You know, you want to feed it good food. You want to get active. You want to treat your mind right. You want everything to be working in conjunction. You want all those pillars to be working in conjunction with each other. I'm rambling and I've actually forgot the question, but I'm going to keep going.
Keep flowing.
This is gold. This is great.
No, this is cool. Remember you've been...
But I guess my goal was to, you know, I think, you know, like we say, behind the uniform, behind the cover, for those that hadn't picked up men's health for a few years, you know, men's health before I was on board was doing great things. They were doing great things in the mental health space. But for those that walked past the news agents in the supermarket at the airport, it did just look like shiny abs, big biceps on the cover of a magazine. And it, my goal was to, without alienating the people that were the readers that were getting that message, was to open the magazine up, even beyond the magazine, so digital, through podcasting, through events, that sort of thing, to really let them know what men's health was about. We're not men's aesthetics, we're men's health. And to kind of represent that through a different choice in Cover Guy, or even just how cover guys were represented, that was my main goal, was to kind of, to really change the perception around male health.
I think that's excellent. And if we think about the, you know, problems that men face with their health, it's not, you know, their body fat percentage.
Yeah.
It's, you know, young men, it's mental health and suicide and, you know, testicular cancer. That's, you know, really mental health is the main health problem for young people. And I can comfortably say that as a doctor. Or it's unhealthy behaviours like drink driving. So, and I love that you say it's men's health, it's not men's aesthetics.
Yeah. Well, I wish I brought my last issue in, because my last editor's letter, I kind of talked about this. And, you know, I guess who's your favourite historical figure?
Oh, gosh, that's a really big question.
Yeah, it is.
But maybe, you know, I'm a nerd. It would be Marie Curie who discovered radio.
So what was her body fat percentage?
Yeah, I'm
no
not sure.
No idea. No one cares, because that had no impact on her work. It's not her legacy. You know, my grandfather was a great guy. You know, both sides of my family, both my grandfathers were great guys. I have no idea what they bench pressed when they were 30 years old. Mm. I don't care, because that's not the impact that they had on my life. That's a very, you know, top-level kind of measurement. And it's... But, you know, the guys they were as human beings and the values they instilled in me, that's what lasts beyond, you know, the size of their biceps, you know?
That's awesome. And obviously, the fact that you were then in charge of that content creation, it goes to show that the vision that we were as a society transforming or evolving, which is fantastic. But have you personally had your own sort of experiences with your mental health battles and the like?
Yeah, definitely. You know, definitely body image as well, you know, kind of coming up after school and going through that. I think it's something that probably, well, I know that a lot of guys I've spoken with kind of deal with that as well. And don't get me wrong, like, we did still do a couple of shirtless covers for Men's Health, you know, whether they were transformations or whatever. But I think, you know, from my own personal, I guess, I can't project my own personal perspective across the brand. I have to take
it. You can in this podcast, though.
In this podcast, I can, yeah. But when I was at the helm of Men's Health, you know. But, yeah, I definitely went through kind of body image stuff. You know, I think...
Which is increasingly common.
It's really, really common.
I was looking at some statistics this morning and, you know, up to 25% of eating disorders are now in men.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, not just anorexia and bulimia, there's also binge eating disorders. And I think there's even more shame in eating disorders in men than there is in women. And I think that probably comes down to how we think of men. You know, they're tough, they don't express their feelings. There's this cultural perception that it's okay for women to worry about what they look like.
Yep.
Men doing that, or men having an eating disorder, you know, that's mad.
Oh, for sure. It absolutely is. And it's that whole stigma. It's what people, you know, their perception of what a man is. And, you know, I'd like to think the modern day man is changing. But I still think we've got, you know, a long way to go. And you touched on the, you know, the eating disorders component. And, you know, people listening probably don't even realise that eating disorders, you know, that's a mental illness. You know, people realise this is a mental health podcast, and eating disorders are a mental illness, which that in itself I find pretty fascinating.
And eating disorders are the mental illness with the... worst rates of fatality. You know, if you have an eating disorder, you're five times more likely to die than the general population. And there's so much misunderstanding about eating disorders that it's, you know, people just wanting attention or stuff like that, which is, you know, ridiculous. And on the topic of eating disorders, Scott, with the magazine and Men's Health, did you ever have any, you know, negative pushback that maybe the projection of what you're, you know, putting on the front cover of the chiseled abs that's not good for people's well-being and self-worth?
Yeah, definitely. And I think when I came into the role, it was something that I was very aware of. You know, obviously growing up as a men's health reader, you know, kind of going back to the question before, it was something that I really wanted to challenge and to change, and was to put all guys of all different body shapes, all different ages as well. You know, we were talking again off mic about, we put Greg Norman on, who he's, I think, 68. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not a typical men's health cover, and it was a bit of a risk. And these were kind of fights, you know, I had to have with my bosses to kind of justify why we were doing this, you know, who we were trying to appeal to. But ultimately, for the most part, they resonated with our audience, which was good. You know, there are a few misfires. One issue that I was super proud of, we did a cover with Liam Payne, who was from One Direction, and, you know, he's quite young, but he has had a whole host of addiction issues and mental health issues. And I was just so proud that we put him on the cover with a mental health cover line, which had never been done on men's health before because it was deemed off-putting. And, you know, it didn't necessarily hit a mark with our audience, unfortunately, but it was still a great story and one of the issues that I'm kind of most proud of because, you know, he's so young and, you know, I want guys that were in my position when I was growing up reading Men's Health to pick up that magazine and go, okay, maybe I'm not to that extent, but I can relate to these issues, and just to make it a little bit more relatable, you know.
Were the covers often photoshopped to kind of portray that thing, or were they completely unphotoshopped?
Never. So the only photoshopping we did in my time was we did a shirtless cover, and the guy's nipple was a little bit off-putting. It was too big, so we reduced his nipple size.
But free the natural nipple.
I won't bring it out here for you, Scott, but I've got quite small nipples. But
it was just a very cold studio. You know, it was. But honestly, no. And that was also something I, again, kind of came in, and it was probably the source of a few arguments, you know, with upper management, is I didn't, when men's health, like, we are so influential in the health sphere, or we should be, and, you know, we want to be authentic and that voice of reason. And if we're putting out people that are cartoons, I may as well illustrate all my covers. There's no point going out and shooting or going out and interviewing someone and presenting this image. You know, obviously, again, we want to put a visually pleasing image out there. But, you know, I think it was one of the things that we did really well, and my creative director did really well, is we worked together to, you know, like, we had Kelly Slater, and he was just at home in his backyard. And if, you know, Kelly Slater walked past you and he wasn't Kelly Slater in the street, he'd just be a skinny 47-year-old bald guy. But he's Kelly Slater, he's iconic. And so we had this image, and he wasn't puffed up, he wasn't, you know, retouched at all. It was just him in his backyard, and it was a great issue, and people resonated with it because he's inspirational, you know.
I think that represents that our culture is changing, and in both men and women, we're seeing a pushback now from these, you know, falsified expectations that 99% of the population aren't able to achieve. And we're wanting more authentic, we're wanting more real, you know, even in the kind of influencer world, people are pushing back from that. And is that something that you felt in the 2 years you were with Men's Health, you noticed the change in culture?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I kind of force it a little bit. You know, there's not a lot in the men's lifestyle magazine space. But, you know, it's something that is, I don't want to put a necessarily positive spin on a dire situation, but something that's come out of the pandemic, for example, in media, is because we were, you know, magazine, you look at the latest GQ cover, and it's great because it's unedited, it was shot at home by the cover guy, it's raw and it's authentic, because we can't hide behind studios and retouching and everything anymore. You know, when people are on TV doing interviews, it's in their living room, their kids are running around, there's mess, there's, you know, we don't live in that curated world anymore. And it's the same applies to, you know, cover guys and life and social media and influencers. You know, there's been a little bit of a shift now where, cool, we haven't had access to, you know, people can't be like, oh, off in Italy having spaghetti today, you know, like, yeah, yeah. We can't. It's like, oh, I've just gone to Chatswood to Westfield, you know, and that was breaking the rules.
And I think there are some silver linings of the pandemic, and that might be one of them, people being a bit more authentic. And for me, is people being more comfortable talking about their mental health. because everyone is going through this together, everyone is struggling. So I'm hoping it gives people the opportunity to go, it is okay to talk about that I'm struggling and I need help and get some skills to get through this. We've talked a lot about body image and how you were trying to change that with men's health. What about in the mental health space? Did you kind of do any work with any mental health charities or have any, apart from the guy from One Direction, other big mental health features?
Yeah, so it kind of ended up, I mean, and it's just, you know, as you said, everyone kind of has these mental health experiences. So within almost every cover story, there was a mental health battle, or it was someone overcoming the odds, whether that be in their mind or physically, and having to adjust their mind to get around that. You know, one of my favorite issues was with a cover guy who's become a great mate, Lincoln Lewis, who, you know, he was very open about his mental health struggles and how kind of turning around his health and treating his body with respect and kind of reaching out to mates, how that helped really helped him. And that led us onto creating a mental health podcast together as well. You know, I think the conversation, men aren't necessarily super afraid to have that anymore. There are still kind of some that you know, have their macho, you know, walls up and want to portray that image. But yeah, I think, you know, working with brands, you know, mental health charities, Movember's one that we work with quite regularly, Livin', you know, Batir, Beyond Blue, you know, they all have the same end goal, and it's to break down the stigma, basically. And it's and, you know, I think in the last 5 years, particularly in the men's space, that's been extremely successful and extremely effective. There's still a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But I think it's been great. And I think personally, from what I've seen from our audience, the next step is now that education piece on how to support each other. And it's, you know, cool. So Hugo, you come to me and say, oh mate, I'm struggling, Scott, I'm struggling, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, well, it's, what do I do? What do I say? How do I handle that? Yeah. And how do I best support you?
It's a great point, and that's what we try and delve into in this podcast. And I'm interested to ask you now the advice you would give if a mate came up to you and said that, because you're right. One thing's kind of being open enough to talk about it, but then having the tools to actually improve your mental health. And if you're that mate that someone approaches, how are you going to help them? So if a mate did approach you saying, you know, Scott, I'm bloody struggling at the moment with my mental health, what's some sort of advice that you would give them?
Look, I'm not a mental health expert. I'm learning like the rest of us. And that's one part I love about my job, is talking to experts, pointing at Izzy.
the clinician on the table.
Yeah, I'm working really hard to not talk. Be like, well, you should say this.
But I think that's what experts should, like, that's what we should be asking experts at the moment.
But if it's important to note that, you know, we're not all clinicians. We're not all experts.
And exactly. I was going to say, Hugo, you said, like, what would you do if a friend did this? And it's like, a friend probably has come to you in the past saying you're struggling. It doesn't need to be an imaginary scenario.
And you don't have to solve the issue, but at least knowing what to do. And this is what people listening, they might be that friend. That's why I think it's important to ask someone like you, Scott, who's obviously got that passion in it, and getting your thoughts on
it. Well, that's definitely the first step. I mean, you know, especially if you don't know what to do and you don't have that clinical background, is to listen and not belittle the problem, you know, and to make sure that you are open to the conversation and not shutting it down. I think that's the very minimum correct me if I'm spreading misinformation, but you know, it, I think that's definitely the next step, is we're comfortable now, and it's even within yourself as well. You know, we are comfortable, I feel, as men, we're becoming more comfortable talking about our issues, but it's how do we fix that for ourselves and how do we fix that for those around us as well.
No, I love that. And you touched on before, Scott, the whole, I think you asked the question is, but about the whole physical health and then the mental health. And I think, you know, they are interconnected. And I think that's the big one there that people can take out of that, is that, we spoke about this having a coffee before, is that, you know, every bit of exercise might be different for everyone. But I think for people to realize that there are absolutely benefits in the physical exercise that can benefit your mental health. And that doesn't mean that, like Izzy, we all have to go run bloody marathons
So that's a really great point. And that's actually something I'd love to kind of share with your listeners.
Yeah, please do.
A lot of my mates and, you know, I work out a lot, because especially now, because I've got so much time on my hands. But you know, like, I have a gym in my garage and I love working out. It's not for everyone, but you know, I think people, you know, if I say let's do a workout together or let's go for a run together, people think that exercise or working out is, to go for a run, you have to break a world record and run a marathon. Or they're like, I'm not going to do a marathon because I'm not going to get a world record. And it's like, you don't have to. You can take 3 days to complete that marathon. It's doing the marathon. Or go for a walk. You know, movement, there's such a barrier. And especially with this, you know, world of social media influencers, that it's always bigger, better, harder, outcompete each other, shock, shock, shock. And it's I think, take one step at a time. Do what's good for you. You know, physical activity is going for a walk. And you know, just because I'm doing something that might seem outrageous, there are people that are doing things that I think are outrageous. You know, it's taking that first step.
Well, something Hugo said to me offline that I was quite shocked by, because, you know, I've grown up as a gymnast, living in crop top and bike shorts and exercising, that you feel uncomfortable. You were uncomfortable even going to a gym.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that, you know, I've been in the army for 10 years and I'm naturally a pretty fit guy and I've always liked running, but I've never been the type to really go into the gym and lift weights. And, you know, this podcast is all about being vulnerable and stuff. And absolutely, during some of like my army training, I had mates who were just, you know, your wireless headphones, had all the gym equipment, all the clothes, and they'd go in there and they'd deadlift and
squat. David Goggins.
Yeah, exactly. Stereotyping.
Callous your mind.
But it's true, and they nothing wrong with that, but they'd go in and squat and deadlift, and they knew their programs, and I'd kind of go in there sometimes and go on like the chest press machine and kind of like...
And it's a barrier, right?
No, for sure. And like in all seriousness, I actually did feel a little bit embarrassed and vulnerable, and to that point that I didn't actually end up going to the gym until very recently, and I'm 28, almost 29, and I've very recently thought, you know what, I actually want to go to the gym, and you know, I've unfortunately lost a bit of weight and muscle through all my surgeries and stuff I've gone through recently.
Cancer's no excuse, Hugo. What are you talking about?
I know, switch on. But there's a cancer card.
My dad died of cancer. I'm allowed to make cancer jokes.
Don't worry, I use the cancer card every now and then. But no, it's true. And so I've thought, actually, I want to go to the gym, not to, you know, for no other reason than for my own self-satisfaction, mm-hmm. for myself. And so now, I personally see a PT now, and he's showing me how to squat and deadlift and stuff like that, which, you know, people have been doing their whole life. But for me, I'm proud of that. And I now walk into the gym and, you know, for me, I even put a singlet on the other day, which seems silly, but for me, that was a big deal. And Amber even said, my partner, she's like, oh, you're wearing a singlet now. And so I think it's a lot to take away with people listening to this, is that, you know, I'm a pretty lean guy, but even I had struggles in going to the gym, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, Scott. And people, I think, have this perception that people are going to judge them for you know, not being as fit as that guy, or not pushing as heavy weights as that guy. But I think, and you touched on it before, you don't have to, and I think we need to get out of that mindset. Yeah. And if like you said, walking the dogs to the park, or you know, going to an F45 class or whatever that is, it's that's the important part.
Yeah. Well, look, the first thing I'll say is I'm exactly the same as you, especially in this job. You know, I kind of, there's been periods where I have gone to the gym late at night because I know people won't be there, because I'm like, you know, what if they see the men's health editor and he's lifting incorrectly? Or I've gone to post something on social media that's a great workout and I'm like, what if my form's not correct and it ruins my reputation as a men's health editor? You know, it's, and you know, going to functions with this job and it's like, well, I can't eat that dessert because I work for men's health. And, you know,
it's a good point. I didn't think about that, but you're right. You would feel like you're constantly being judged.
But then at the same time, that's all in my head. And then my advice to listeners would be, think about how self-conscious you are going into these pursuits and going into the gym, and how self-conscious I was. Everyone else is exactly the same. No one is looking at you, they're looking at themselves.
I was gonna say, like, yeah, I'm not trying to burst both of your bubbles, but
no one really gives a shit.
Hang on, Izzy, you're telling me that people weren't checking me out at the gym?
I was gonna say Amber cared.
I know, Amber cared. She thought I looked good in a singlet. Thank you, Izzy.
My brother-in-law gave me some good advice a while ago. He said, Izzy, in your 20s, you care about what people think about you. In your 30s, you stop caring. And then in your 40s, you realise no one was thinking about you at all. But I think it's important to talk about, like, what are you doing it for? What are you exercising for? Are you doing it for what other people think of you or for yourself? And I do a little bit of, I've worked at health retreats and talking about exercise, and I talk to people about finding their why and prioritising their own health and their own self-care. And it's all about, you know, each person might have a different why. And that's okay, you know, but it's all about doing it for yourself.
That's another thing as well. It's, you know, if you are doing it for other people, that's fine. That's your why, you know. But if you're doing it for you, you're doing it for you. So worry much, about you.
Probably doing it for yourself is much more sustainable in the long term.
I agree, and I would advise that. But I'm just saying, but people do have their motives, and
also finding, if you find something enjoyable as well, you're more likely to do it more. So whether that is running, whether that is going to the gym, you know, and like we've talked about, and this obviously is a mental health podcast because this is absolutely relevant. Because there's, you know, been lots of scientific studies to show that, and you can probably touch on this soon, Izzy, that physical exercise benefits your mental health, but it's finding that physical exercise that you enjoy doing.
That's it. And I think that was something that I tried to achieve with men's health as well, is you know, by putting different body types on the cover or featuring different body types. You know, I'm a human greyhound. I'm super lanky. I'm built for running and swimming, and that's pretty much
mate,
it.
I reckon I've almost got you for the
lanky. Tying myself
department.
In a knot, you know.
I reckon I've got you for the lanky department, mate. We'll do.
But we're going to be phenomenal basketball football players one day.
One day.
But you know, I'm not going to be a bodybuilder. That's just not how I'm built and meant to function. So it's showing, you know, like one of our great covers was Patty Mills, basketball player, you know, plays in the NBA. He's not your stereotypical men's health, big, bulky guy, but he's a phenomenal athlete and he's one of Australia's best athletes, and we should be aspiring to be like him, not just physically, but not just in his physical capacity, but the character of the man himself. And that's kind of what I wanted to, like I said, we're going back to this point again, but realizing that health is holistic and that there is more than one visual representation of health.
And Scott, can I ask, you know, for someone maybe listening to this who might have a bigger body, carrying a bit of extra weight, do you have advice who, you know, will never be able to be the cover of Men's Health? Because realistically, all of our bodies are different. Some people are naturally going to be really skinny regardless of what they eat, and some people are going to be naturally bigger regardless of what they eat and they exercise. And, you know, as a doctor, I can very, with my hand on my heart, say our health is not determined by how much adipose tissue, so that's the scientific word for fat, we carry on our tummy. And, you know, it's all about our fitness, our mental health, our connection. For someone, you know, and you've met all of these amazing lean, ripped people, do you have advice for someone who might not feel very good about their body and, you know, what's important to care about and does it really matter that much?
Look, it definitely doesn't matter that much as long as you're treating your body with respect towards your goals and your outcome. So again, going back to your body is an instrument, not an ornament. So you want your body to function at the best that it possibly can for what you want it to do. And you know, if it's a guy that's wanting to looking to get into sport and maybe he's a little bit bigger, it's 2020. There are so many great sports out there that are suited to bigger guys, you know. Even if you just look at a footy team, you've got the full spectrum from props all the way through to the wingers, you know. The great thing about the world we live in is there's support and there are places for everyone, all body types, all types of personalities as well. And like I said, if you treat your body with respect, you feed it the right food that it agrees with and it's working towards your goals, phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I think something that everyone can take away. And, you know, we did touch on just before, and I just wanted to do a quick little plug with the last episode with Steve Willis. You know, great episode there. But he did talk about the whole, when he started exercising, and he used it as a form of punishment for him, because he, you know, for his mental health battles. But he said he got, initially it was, you know, what numbers is he hitting? You know, constantly lifting heavier weights. And you touched on that before, Scott, with a lot of people, that's what it's all about. Until he realized, why is he exercising? Yeah. What's the reason is he exercising? And it came down to, well, it's the enjoyment factor for him that it makes him feel good. It makes him feel good. And so he then got out of the mindset, and this is coming from an, you know, extremely fit dude, that he changed, almost transformed his mindset with exercise, and he treated it as kind of, that was his way of, you know, enjoyment, and it made him feel good, which correlated to good mental health. And I think it's important for people to realize there is that ultimately, it's finding something that makes them feel good and something they can enjoy.
And exercise can be unhealthy. A lot of people might start exercising with good intentions, but it become, you know, an addiction. Being a little bit vulnerable myself, I was, you know, profoundly underweight for years, and I used exercise as a way to stay really skinny. And, you know, psychologists and lots of kind of personal development work later, I now have a really healthy relationship with exercise. And I think that is important for both men and women to look at how we are, you know, approaching exercise. Is it a healthy balance? Are we okay if we miss a session? Is it to make ourselves feel good and be healthy, or is it because we are, you know, dreadfully unhappy with ourselves and are trying to reach unrealistic expectations? And I think that's a conversation for both men and women.
I think you want to work out because you love your body, not work out because you hate your body. You know, you want to, you want to, and if you're working out and hating it and it, and it's a chore, just take a step back and reassess what you're doing and maybe try something else. You know, you want it to, again, you want it to form a part of your life. You want to approach your health holistically. Most of us aren't going to be Olympic athletes, so we don't need to dedicate 8 hours a day to one form of physical activity. We can play with it. We can experiment. We can try new things. And you know, it's making it a part of your day. Even if, you know, a lot of my mates hate working out and they feel like they have nothing to talk. And I'm like, that's cool. Like, but maybe just, you know, incorporate a walk into your commute or something like that.
Maybe a bit of Zumba.
Absolutely. Get on board with that Zumba. Are they a sponsor of this podcast? Is that why?
I don't know why I thought of that. I just thought of Zumba.
But yeah, you know, it's things that also, you know, physical activity and being active doesn't mean smashing yourself in the gym every day. It's just being active and moving your body.
And it's so nice we're transitioning from that 80s, 90s Arnie Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's a, we're also seeing changes not only about physicality and mental health, but also what it means to be, you know, a man and what masculinity is, which is something we haven't really touched on yet in this episode. But for Hugo and I, who are both ambassadors for the Movember charity, something that they talk about a lot is, you know, redefining modern masculinity. And I remember talking to one of my male mates about that, and he was like, oh, God, you know, what a load of rubbish. I was like, Andy, this doesn't mean you can't, you know, have beers with the mates and get rowdy. It's about, you know, being able to express how you're feeling and being able to express your emotions. And I think that's the other thing men's health were also doing, not just about changing physicality, also changing that culture of what it means to be a man. Do you have any insight on that, Scott?
Yeah, and, you know, it is unfortunate because I feel like we were making headway in that kind of department and kind of redefining masculinity. And unfortunately, that platform has been taken away from us now. But, you know, there still was a lot to go. And there were kind of covers and issues that we had planned to tackle coming up in the next few issues that really did challenge, especially where we are today in society. You know, it's such a great time to have these conversations, and people are responding well to challenging traditional mindset and thought patterns. You know, it's a really, and all I can say is if there are people in media or in positions of influence to continue those conversations, definitely do. This is the time to create real change, and people are open to it and not resisting it.
No, I love that, Scott. Look, you should be proud, I think, mate, because, you know, you are a pretty humble guy, but I think, you know, what you've been a part of in that, you know, evolving that men's health magazine, and I think it's something that, like you said, should continue to happen. But unfortunately, recently, the magazine has had to sort of close up shop. Obviously, COVID naturally hasn't helped with that whole thing. And
COVID,
you know, but obviously print media struggling and the like. But how, just before we look to start wrapping things up, but how did you handle that initial news? Obviously, it's something you're clearly passionate about, and you've done some amazing things, worked with some amazing people, and then all of a sudden you've had to sort of stop that. And how did you initially handle that?
Yeah, look, I'm passionate about two things, and that's health and media. I definitely don't think print is dead. Well, let me take that back. I think print is facing challenging times, but I think brands aren't dead. And there are brands that are doing media and getting their messages out there and surviving and thriving in this world really well. And they have creative partnerships. They're exploring new mediums.
Are you allowed to give us examples?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at, so I always look at Goop in the US. Sometimes,
oh, do not get me started.
No, wait. Batshit crazy content. But as terms of a media organization, they're getting their batshit crazy content out there because they know how to connect with their audience. You look locally, GQ, again, you know, has great events. They know how to engage men and they know how to promote their message. I think, you know, back to your question is, you know, how did I take the shutting of men's health? I took it really bad because I believe right now, especially in 2020, there's a place for men's health. There's a place, there's a definite need for educated health knowledge. And there's a definite need for a platform to kind of share educated voices and expert opinions, and to share male stories that men can relate to kind of help them through this year. Personally, I wrapped up all my value in my job. I was working quite long hours, and then when it all came to a stop overnight, I really struggled with that because I was like, well, wait, I'm the men's health editor. I'm not Scott Henderson. I'm the men's health editor. What do you mean? And I was, you know, it was kind of like a who am I kind of moment, you know? And when that whole piece is taken away from you, you know, you do struggle because you're like, you wake up and you're like, what do I do today? Who am I? What are my actual interests outside of my job?
And then I suppose, Scott, on that, relating to what's currently going on, a lot of people have unfortunately lost jobs as a result to what's going on. And you said you faced that whole, that was your life and you no longer had that. What are a couple of things that you found helped you get through those difficult days, and maybe people listening who are struggling to find that next sort of step in their chapter or their journey? What were a few things you did?
Well, another thing that kind of really hit me was I had a team and I felt responsible for the team. Mm. And, you know, there's a sense of I've let them down kind of thing. But I think what got me through, you know, we initially, before we got shut down, were put on pause for 3 months, and it was keeping in contact with the team. So, you know, checking in on them,
connection. Seeing
how they have connection. Exactly.
Love it.
You know, I think, and again, I'm kind of at the end of probably 5 months of not working. So I've had time to adjust it. My thing is, don't fight the feelings. Like, you'll feel angry, you'll feel upset. Let that happen. I was very angry when it happened. I was very upset. I worked with career coaches. I went to psychologists. I did all that. And it was actually a good chance for me to step back and say, hey, you've been preaching all this stuff for years. Practice it now.
Had you seen a psychologist before this?
No, I hadn't, no.
And how was that experience for you?
The best. It's so good. It's you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we always said with men's health, you train your body, you eat well, and you should train your mind. And I just had never made the time. But making that time, it is like training your body. And you know what? You go even if you're feeling good, because you won't always be feeling good.
I'm glad you said that. I literally spoke to my psychologist yesterday, phone consultation. And even we discussed that even when you're starting to feel good, it's important to keep those up. And really great to hear you got a lot from your psychologist. And one of the things we actually touched on, and something that you were talking about, how you're preaching all this amazing stuff about mental health and, you know, redefining masculinity and all this type of stuff. But then if you're not doing it yourself, it's kind of, well, hang on a second. And then my psychologist actually said, Hugo, it's important that you're checking in on yourself. So we're constantly checking in on other people. But she's like, when was it last you kind of checked in on yourself at the end of the day, end of the week? And I said, it's actually a good point. So it almost gave you an opportunity to check in on yourself and look after yourself.
Yeah. Well, look, one of the things as well, you know, when all this was happening with men's health, I was resistant to talk to my friends about myself because I was very much of the mindset, everyone's doing it tough now. My problems aren't problems. They're not. And you know what? In the grand scheme of things, they might not be, whatever, but you should never belittle your own problems. And going to a psychologist was that safe space where I wasn't judged and I could actually talk about what was bothering me and not have it belittled. And I even started the consultation. I was like, this is probably wasting your time. You probably could be helping so many more people, you know, and I was really apologetic for going and wasting this guy's time.
But the first time I saw a psychologist, I said the exact same thing. Yeah. I said, I feel so bad. I have a mental health plan and I'm using taxpayers' dollars. And the psychologist was like, you know, I actually had quite a lot going on in my life. And they're like, Izzy, like, this is ridiculous. Even though, you know, someone else could have it worse, that doesn't mean your struggles aren't valid.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really important concept that in our society, you know, often we compare ourselves to people that are high achiever or better than us. And we, you know, we allow ourselves to go, oh, I want to be like that person. But then if someone's struggling, you know, we always think, oh, it could be worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, so our experiences aren't valid. I don't deserve support. And, you know, I work as a cancer doctor. If I didn't, you know, let myself feel sad because someone else has it worse, I'd have to be dying of cancer.
Yeah.
It's a good point. I think it's, you know, something that people listening can take away from this is that someone like yourself, you know, you were living, breathing that. Some of the people you were around all day, every day, that was your job. And then ultimately it's kind of, you know, you got to the stage where you had to to do that yourself. Had to look after yourself. You saw the psychologist, and you got a lot out of the psychologist, which is amazing to hear. 100%. And mate, you obviously, unfortunately, don't have a job with Men's Health at the moment or anymore. And noting the time, and we don't want to hold you up because you actually are going off to do some work at the after this. So we don't want to get in the way of that.
No, that's all good.
So before we do let you go, mate, what is something, a challenge that you can set Izzy and me, and something that hopefully the listeners at home can also do, and something that's sort of close to you, close to this episode?
Yep. Well, something that's top of mind is, being a journalist, whatever kind of story I'm researching or writing, I like to immerse myself in the process and kind of really understand it firsthand. And I've been writing a lot about gratitude lately and researching gratitude, thanks to a mutual friend of ours, Izzy, Dr. Kieran Kennedy. And basically, there's this practice, and it's pretty widely known and common, but it sounds a bit, again, it's breaking down those stereotypical ideas around masculinity. But before you go to bed, you write down three things that you're grateful for, but you have to physically write them down. It's not just going to bed and being like, oh yeah, great, that chocolate bar was great today, whatever. It's
what's the benefit of writing down versus thinking of them?
Well, it makes it, it gives it a tangible, it's something tangible that you can actually read. You've gone through the process of writing it. You've really given it thought. And then it's there as a physical, tangible gratitude. I'm scared of saying journal because I know that'll put off some guys. But again, we're smashing stereotypes around masculinity. But having that there as a gratitude journal. And it doesn't have to be full paragraphs or sentences, just three things that day that you're grateful for, and try and identify different grateful ones, and just do it for a week and see if you go to bed happier and wake up happier. And I guarantee I did it. And it was just like, do you know what? Even if it was a placebo effect, I don't care. It just
it's
felt
not
like
a medication. You can't have a placebo effect.
It felt like a weight was lifted. You're even if you're going to bed with a negative mindset, you're almost forcing that positivity to come through and to identify the good around you.
No, I love that. And what were your three things you were grateful for last night before you went to bed?
Coming on the Behind the Uniform podcast tomorrow.
Yeah,
thank you, Scott.
Yeah. The opportunity to talk to you guys. Look, mine vary quite greatly from huge things in life, in the world, to kind of minute things that, if I'm really struggling, but, to think of something, it could be that I have food in the fridge kind of thing.
No, I want last night's.
But there's always a person. There's every time I do it, there's always a person.
Right.
So
and that you've got a family sausage dog that you love dearly.
We're fighting at the moment. Oh. She's a little bit naughty. We're feuding.
No, that's great. And look, we'll definitely be. I actually used to do that, and every day I want to try get back into that because I actually did get a lot out of that.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest one is not being so hard on. And Moses Enrique is actually his third value was if you don't do that, then don't beat yourself up about it. So, will you be doing it?
I actually have a weekly gratitude diary already. I do it weekly, and it's got my goals that I'm working towards for the week, three things I've done to help other people, which is actually really hard because my job as a doctor is my job. I can't count that. And some other bits and pieces. So I already do it, and embarrassingly, it's like running is what makes me grateful. The sunny day or a good coffee. I'll continue doing it.
But you need to break that habit of saying embarrassingly. Just own it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's whatever you're grateful for
And let's next episode, let's bring a little notebook along and let's actually go through it and just see see what we were grateful for that week. I think it's important. Hopefully the listeners.
I was going to say, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you do a teaser.
Exactly right. Excellent. That sounds good.
So thank you so much for the chats today, Scott. I think we covered a lot of things from male eating disorders and body image, mental health, and how that kind of landscape is changing in the media. Redefining modern masculinity. It's okay to express your emotions, talk about your feelings, see a psychologist. Is there anything else as we finish up that something that you're really passionate about and you're excited for going into the future that you want to leave your mark on in the world?
Yeah, look, I mean, not specifically. I'm obviously in a bit of a period of transition myself, but I think this time has really taught me what I am passionate about, and that is men's health, the topic. So I want to dedicate my working life you know, I'm a big believer in kind of mixing life and career, and I want to dedicate myself towards that. There's nothing specifically exciting that I'm working on necessarily at the moment, but I'm excited where the conversation's going. I'm excited that, you know, stereotypes are being challenged and broken down, and that I think the work of organizations such as Movember, you know, they are creating real tangible change, especially, you know, like as I said, in the last 5 years. And I think that's really exciting to see. And it's continuing to kind of promote that change and support, you know, these causes that really need support.
No, I love that, mate. And I love your passion. And if we're ever looking for a third host on Behind the Uniform, well, mate, if you ever want to join us.
I've got all the time in the world. So give me a call.
But one of the things I just wanted to finish up on, one of the quotes you actually said, which I thought would... I really liked it. You said, you know, work out because you love your body, not because you hate it. And I think it's something I'm probably going to take on board. So as you said, thanks again for your time. We really do appreciate it. And for those listening, hopefully you got something out of this episode, because it was a slightly different one, but we think there are lots of sort of valuable lessons and take homes. And we'd love you to let us know what you thought. Every time one of you sort of reach out to us and let us know what you thought of the episode, we really do value it. Leave us a rating, review, and give us some honest feedback and criticism.
Yeah, it's not an echo chamber. We're open to constructive feedback.
We honestly are, though. I think that's the whole point of this show. We're vulnerable ourselves, and we're wanting to get better, but ultimately get comfortable with the uncomfortable conversation. So thanks again for your time, Scott.
No, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.